real quickly that we ran across in a book called Endless Enemies by Jonathan Quitney, who is a Wall Street Journal reporter. It's a very good book, by the way. It's full of all kinds of nifty things. It's copyrighted 1984. It's published by Congdon and Weed Incorporated in New York. The segment that I'm going to read, which is rather short, alludes to the Grenada invasion, which most of you out there probably remember. Just to real quickly give you the background on it, the president in Grenada for many years prior to the Grenadian invasion, the head of the country was a man named Maurice Bishop, head of the New Jewel political party, the New Jewel movement, and a socialist, a friend of Fidel Castro's, and still a tremendously popular man in Grenada, very popular man. Okay, now what happened is that the coup started, Bernard Cord and General T. Hudson Austin, Bernard Cord had been a cabinet member, and T. Hudson Austin apparently started the coup. Within the first days of the coup, Maurice Bishop, the very popular head of state, was killed by the military. Then the United States used the safety of the American students in the medical school there as an excuse to go into Grenada and prevent the revolution, or prevent the overthrow, as the case may be, and restore a more favorable government, favorable to the United States. Now, one of the points that Quitney makes is that if the government had invaded Grenada a week or two before, it would have been just as socialist, if not more so, but that they would have found a much less popular reception, because Maurice Bishop was a very, very well-loved public figure. Bear in mind also that although we don't really have time to go into it tonight, that there are numerous strange intelligence ties to the Grenada Medical School that we've outlined on back numbers of One Step Beyond Hard Rain, which we don't have time to talk about tonight. Anyway, reading from Jonathan Quitney's book, Endless Enemies. The intriguing thing about the Cord coup, as one sees it from the facts now available, is that the only outsiders who stood to benefit from overthrowing Bishop were not the Cubans or Russians, but the policymakers in Washington. With U.S. military efforts in Central America and Lebanon in real trouble, and the president planning to run for re-election, the U.S. governing team needed a victory to justify its whole foreign policy attitude. Is it possible that Washington, acting perhaps through some agent provocateur, catalyzed the October coup on Grenada, paving the way for our intervention? Could Cord himself, who was quickly captured by the U.S. but not made available for public questioning, have been in U.S. pay? There is no evidence for saying so, except for the circumstances cited here, and the fact that such a scheme would have been no more exotic than others we have tried in the Congo, in Vietnam, in Iran, in Guatemala, in Cuba itself, and in other places. All the stranger, then, is the presence of one-time CIA operative and international bête noire, Frank Turpel, on Grenada right up to the time of the coup, when he returned to his haunts in the Middle East. We can only hope that in years to come, some logical explanation will be forthcoming for why Bernard Cord did what he did.
So again, Frank Turpel's name cropping up once again in the context of provocation, the overthrow of the Maurice Bishop government, its replacement with ostensibly a more militant left-wing government, which served as the justification for the U.S. invasion of Grenada. Okay, very quickly, President Reagan has been making many statements about how he does not recognize Soviet hegemony over Eastern Europe, and he referred to Soviet hegemony in Poland and other places, and I thought in that context it might be good to wind up the broadcast here with some information concerning Turpel and Wilson and some of their associates' activities in Poland, or in around Poland, concerned with, of course, arms trafficking. Following articles from the news from Newsweek, the issue of April 23rd, 1984. There's an article here entitled, A Trail of U.S. Guns to Poland. It was a gun-running operation with a twist. Earlier this year, U.S. customs agents seized a shipment of 500 Connecticut-made Ruger automatic rifles, electronic torture devices, and a specially armed Cadillac worthy of James Bond, all headed for Polish officials in Warsaw. Federal agents had never before encountered anyone trying to smuggle arms to the Soviet bloc, where guns are not exactly in short supply. The tale grew stranger still. Authorities learned that the two New York men arrested for the attempted smuggling, Solomon Schwartz and Leonard Berg, also had dealings with officials of the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency. Investigators are still trying to solve a case that appeared to lead deep into the murky Fellowship of International Arms Merchants. Newsweek has learned that a grand jury has subpoenaed Leon Lisbona, a security expert and associate of Frank Turpel, the former CIA employee who has been charged with providing arms and torture equipment to Muammar Gaddafi and Idi Amin, among others. Lisbona, who runs an electronics retail store on Madison Avenue, has not been charged and refused to respond to inquiries by reporters. But federal authorities believe that he and another Turpel friend, Gary Korkala, are closely tied to Berg. Last week, in an interview with Newsweek from his jail cell where he is awaiting trial in a separate arms case, Korkala confirmed the associations and said Berg and Lisbona seem to have contacts with the CIA. If a connection between the Polish smuggling and the notorious Turpel operation turns out to exist, the worldwide weapons trade will look more than ever like a tightly knit conspiracy. So here we have Turpel, a Wynn Wilson associate, smuggling arms to the Soviet bloc, reportedly in connection with elements of CIA or DIA. And so, again, what goes around comes around, and it seems to be going around, and hopefully it won't come around, but we'll see.
We will indeed see. We're going to take a short break again for about 5 minutes, and we're going to be opening the phones. The phones are open now. We're going to be answering the phones in about...
I wanted to point out the fact that your broadcast this evening is, according to what I understand, prosecutable under a law the Congress has passed during Reagan's term. I wish to read a short bit from Ronnie Duggar's recent book on Reagan. It says, following the recommendations of the administration, Congress passed during Reagan's second spring as president the first law in American history which authorizes the prosecution of journalists as criminals for publishing public information. The law prohibits the use of any printing press to publish any information, whether part of a public record or already published elsewhere, which identifies U.S. intelligence agents. The penalty for offending journalists is up to 4 years in prison and a $15,000 fine for each offense. And skipping a paragraph, they go on to say, conferees on the bill at the last moment issued a report saying that exposure of ex-agents Edwin Wilson and Frank Turpel, who allegedly helped train terrorists in Libya, would not have been a crime under the law, and that only the journalists who are in the business of ferreting out agents would be prosecuted. But he goes on to say, but that is not what the law says, and that is not what the sponsor of the Reason to Believe language in the Senate, John Chaffee, said.
All right. Well, what can I say to that except if this is treason, let me make the most of it. And come and get us, Ronnie. We're here.
Yeah. The thing about that bill is so far, to the best of my knowledge, nobody's ever had any problems about publishing what is really public information or what's published information. What they're really talking about there, at least insofar as any cases have been prosecuted, is somebody... Going into, say, government archives and publishing lists of CIA agents, and I don't recall hearing anybody having been prosecuted under that. But if they want to prosecute us, we'll fight it to the best of our ability.
Okay.
I mean,
although you're right, the language and the writer of the article is right. The language of that particular law is very open ended, and conceivably at some later date when public tolerance has been beaten down a little bit, it may be used in more general ways.
Exactly. That's what I wish to point out. Since it is a discriminatory law, it allows discriminatory prosecuting, and perhaps a public figure could become such a stature that the fact that he would be a special case might be difficult to notice by the public. The public might not realize that it was a...
In fact, a violation of that same law.
Well, when it comes down to exposing the involvement of U.S. government agencies in activities which are, in essence, overthrowing the United States government or jeopardizing seriously American interests, it's something that I think you're going to want to keep that out of the courts.
Probably so.
They'll deal with that in covert fashion if they decide to deal
right.
with that.
That's right. They'll send by a car to bumper Stennis. But no, good point. Thanks for your call.
Thanks.
Good night. Okay, back to the phones again. Line open, 415-941-2500. Good evening. Yeah, oh my goodness. Somebody over there was not patient. Good evening, Mountain View. Welcome to Radio Free America.
Hi, I'm just wondering why no one's done a covert operation against you guys yet. or are you also approved by the CIA?
Well, not as far as I know.
I would add in that regard, though, that, you know, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, Mae Brussel, whose tapes have been aired here on KFJC for some years, has stopped having her current tapes broadcast on the air due to the fact that her son received a very serious death threat.
Yeah, my fantasy is that you guys are part of the conspiracy and that now that Mae Brussel's off the air, you're slowly, through successive approximations, going to more and more go over toward the Reagan point of view. How's that for a conspiracy theory?
Well, have you ever considered the possibility that you might be a fool?
Would I ever consider the possibility that that's all you could say about that?
No, the thing to do, obviously, is to keep listening and monitor.
Well, I mean, you know, like, I'm really surprised. I mean, you're putting out all this information, and if the government wants to keep it a secret, why the heck are they allowing you to continue on the air, especially if they're willing to do all this covert stuff and kill all these people all over the place?
Well, actually, this is a good point. Other people have brought it up, and
just wondering why.
I've got a couple of guesses. First of all, there's always the hide in plain sight theory, which is that as long as it's people on tiny little radio stations like us who are talking about this kind of stuff, we can say anything we want to virtually, it doesn't make a heck of a lot of difference because even though we have a good listening public in our area, it's still a minute portion of even the local population.
Yeah, so actually, as long as none of us act on what you say.
Well, no, not necessarily, because you're private citizens. But now, if, for instance, one of us, either Dave or I, was suddenly elected to the United States Senate and was out pushing this stuff on the floor of the House, you know they'd be scrabbling through our files looking for dirty laundry real quick, and after that we might catch a disease.
Well, beyond that, if something more practical, you know, say if we were ever to get this material, or we were ever to get on, you know, KGO or a major television station or something like that and attempt to disseminate it, then I think... if we weren't dealt with, you know, dealt with violently, I think you'd find that we'd lose our job very quickly. Strings would be pulled and we'd be out the door pretty quick.
Yeah, okay, thanks a lot.
Okay,
yeah,
bye-bye. Bye. We're hoping none of this happens, by the way.
The caller might notice that Jessica Savage is no longer doing the NBC News.
And she was doing some very, very heavy stuff. As a matter of fact, talking about a lot of the things that we've talked about, although not quite in as much depth, but with a great deal more exposure than we have. Okay, back to the phones again, and we do have some lines open at 415-941-2500. We've had a couple of people drop off. Maybe we're having problems with the phone. I don't know. Good evening, LaHonda, and welcome to KFJC and Radio Free America.
Hi, this is Tony.
Hello.
I've never been on a talk show before, but I just wanted to say that I've been around the USA approximately about 47 states in the last 3 months hitchhiking. I've done a lot of things like eaten lobster 4 different times. I've only been on the road for like 3 months, and I've had escargot, Arabic food. I've traveled in limousines, saw Michael Jackson concert, went out with the famous Kenny Kerr in Las Vegas.
So?
Just having a good time, good summer, good people of the U.S.
Okay.
How is that relevant to the material we're talking about?
I don't know.
Well, I do, and it's not. Okay, 415-941. See, now we're getting the phone calls off sharp, but we need the calls back on again. 415-941-2500. We don't have the time, as we mentioned. We're still down. We're down to about half an hour left. We do have lines open, though. We may be having some problems, but we are getting people on the air, so obviously they're there. Give us a call if you want to get on the phone and ask us about some of these things. There's a couple of lines going. We still have some open. Okay, now we're going. Caller, I'm sorry to have to call to cut the young woman off. Obviously, though, as I mentioned before, we've got a 3-hour broadcast. Plus, find out. Good evening, line one. Welcome to Radio Free America.
Oh, thank you. This is Chris Kennard. I'm calling from Redwood City. I'm sorry, I didn't catch your names, but I was just fascinated by the stuff you were saying. And I was wondering if you could address the question of why the U.S., it seems like, is going into all these underground efforts and coming up with supporting the wrong groups. It seems like the Soviets are doing a much, much better job of supporting the mainline thinking in the countries they go into.
Well, that's a very, very good question. Far be it for me, and probably even Dave, to consider ourselves to be experts of a magnitude enough to really hold the whole thing down on that. One suggestion would be this. First of all, it's my feeling, and I think that it can be argued pretty convincingly, that the Soviets tend to be a reactive power, for one thing. The Soviets do not, regardless of what Claire Sterling and Michael Ledeen and these other people say, the Soviets do not, and many other intelligent people agree with my viewpoint on this, do not seem to be as adventurous in nature in their intelligence activities. As a result, the Soviets tend to fill gaps. In other words, when the United States has gone in, or the Western powers have gone in and really botched something up, then the Soviet Union moves in. This has been the case almost continually in the Middle East, in South America, in Asia, etc. So they don't wind up putting themselves out on the line as much. Secondly, I would suggest that the people in the right wing of the United States intelligence apparatus are at least as ideologically committed, if not more so, to their way of thinking than the Soviet Union's people are to theirs. And as a result, they get into some really ridiculous situations because sometimes I think the ideological concerns outweigh the actual strategic and tactical concerns.
I agree.
So these are a couple of possible reasons. Also, the Soviet Union, having been part of the European melange for, 300, 400 years of intense espionage activity, just naturally, probably as most of the European secret services do, has a bit of a head start in terms of intelligent usage of espionage during peacetime. Perhaps that's another reason they're not so adventuristic.
Good. I was also kind of on that vein. I was thinking of, what you were saying earlier about the things connected with how CIA agents, Ed Wilson, was that?
Ed Wilson, right.
Wilson, in the Cuban thing, and then following up through Kennedy's assassination. And the impression I got from what you were saying is that the CIA is kind of an agency that is an animal that government officials have a tough time controlling. Well, it's all getting close to.
That your statement would be an accurate sort of summary of all of the, or if not all, an awful lot of the information that we've been presenting on these broadcasts, and, on One Step Beyond, on Radio Free America, Hard Rain, and Mae Brussels that we've talked about. Indeed, the difficulty of controlling the entire U.S. intelligence apparatus has been a task that's proved impossible for all of our presidents of at least the last quarter century, and fatal to at least one. And so I think your point's well taken as far as that. Your observation is correct, I think.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I guess rather than tie up the line, I'll let somebody else get on.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your call. We hope, if you're interested in this stuff, that, by the way, I'm Nip Tuck. This is Dave Emery here in the studio with me, and I hope you will stay in touch with some of our other programs here on KFJC.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, 415-941-2500 is the number with a line open, and I hope this is right. I don't know if this is outdated information or not. We do have lines open. Good evening, Santa Clara. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, welcome to Radio Free America. How are you?
Thank you. Fine. I just wanted to say that my name is George Wirshner, and I work for American firms overseas, and I really appreciated listening to your program with this. I think that you would also be very, very much amazed at how many special interest groups are involved in American firms working in third world and when you're underdeveloped countries that have like a special kind of espionage agents that are also there to scope out what is going on in these foreign countries overseas.
We might not be amazed because we do cover a lot of this kind of stuff. I'm sure that there are just thousands and thousands of things about this subject that we don't know. Have you read a book called Spooks by James Hogan?
No, sir.
I would recommend that to you actively. It's H-O-U-G-I-N is how his last name is spelled. G-A-N. Okay, H-O-U-G-A-N is how his last name is spelled. You can probably find it in most public libraries if you don't find it in a bookstore. And essentially the premise of his book is that the dividing line between private and public clandestine intelligence has gotten very blurry, dating back to such things as the CIA's involvement with the Hughes Corporation and other things of that nature. And he talks about that in some length, how a lot of these places like IT&T and these other big international companies actually do have their own security services and intelligence forces.
Definitely so. I just returned from a 3-year contract in Sinop in Ankara, Turkey, And when you, there's about 2,000 American firms where that are just basically there to, when you snoop and poop and find out what is actually going on in neighboring countries.
Well, Ankara is certainly, Turkey in general is certainly a hot spot because of not only its geographical position, but its political position.
Very much so.
So I would not doubt that at all. Now, I should just mention to you, first of all, since you gave your name, that I certainly hope that you don't say anything that's going to get you in trouble, but a lot of these companies, do you come into contact with people who are, what should I say, that also have government connections, or are these just privately commercial, primarily private and commercial firms?
What is very interesting is a lot of these American firms are like private commercial firms that do government contracts overseas. And one of the most interesting things, that I found out, some of the people that they have working for them, is that they prefer to hire military individuals, people that are retired from the military, colonels, majors, in very specialty fields, communications and electronics, and a lot of these really specialty secretive fields. And is that they have them in certain areas working for them.
I definitely would recommend that you pick up Spooks if you get a chance, because this is exactly the kind of stuff that you're talking about, and it's very, very rich with information on a lot of these kinds of operations. And if you're interested in, and also just if you're in these situations, it might do you some good just to know some more about it, if nothing else, just to help you to be cautious and still be interested.
Thank you very, very, very much, and I just wanted to call up and say that irregardless of what the other listeners say, that you have a very special program, and it's that you can tell from the people that call in, those people that travel and those people that don't, and those people that do, you become very wise and very knowledgeable about what is going on overseas.
All right, very good. Thanks
nice
again for your call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, 415-941-2500. I do think we're dropping some phone calls off tonight. That does not mean that most of the people are not getting through, but we seem to be losing one of the middle lines. So give us a call. Let us know as you speak to the phones again. And good evening, San Jose. Welcome to Radio Free America. Hello? We lost another one. Okay. Let's try line two. Good evening. Welcome to Radio Free America.
Hello. I was just wondering... I called a little bit earlier, and we were talking about how the United States seems to support different types of regimes that aren't all that popular in the countries that they're at.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you might address that. It seems like kind of an empty spot in countries that would seemingly be open for, subversion or whatever. Like, for instance, the Philippines,
uh-huh.
A country that has a lot of anti-Marcosism or whatever within it. It seems like it'd be ripe for the picking of installing, another government or something like that. Something that would be better for the people than what's already there. Is this too?
Okay. Well, this is something. Oh, Dave, you.
Well, the thing is, as far as the United States supporting unpopular governments, frequently one of the rubs with American foreign policy is the whole question of natural resources, which Shackley and some of the people were talking about in that Gung Ho article that we read you.
Mm-hmm.
Often American foreign policy, in as much as it represents the in as much as it results from the various competing interests within it. In other words, there are many large commercial firms in this country who do business overseas and have need of natural resources overseas. And the American foreign policy, to a considerable extent, is determined by those business enterprises. And when they have a particular thing in mind for a given foreign country, say in terms of expropriating ore or obtaining ore or fruit or whatever it is from that particular country, often their needs will be in direct conflict with those of the population. In other words, corporation is out to get materials cheap, and a population wants to be paid as much as possible for them in terms of wages or whatever. And that is one source of the conflict.
On the flip side now, as to why the Soviet Union doesn't exploit some of these things, like a place like the Philippines, one of the things that I think Clark Clifford, I believe it was, who was formerly not a particularly leftist type, he was a key advisor to Lyndon Johnson, he was once Secretary of Defense, I believe, for a while. Anyway, Clark Clifford said something to the effect of the other day he was being interviewed or he was on Meet the Press or something, and he was saying, well, let's face it, I mean, all this nonsense you hear from the Reagan administration about Cuba and the Cuban threat. He said most of Central and South America, there's just no way the Russians are going to get a foothold there, and the Cubans don't have a foothold either. The Cubans can support some, you know, areas where the populace has literally been driven to the wall, but in most places nobody really gives a darn what the Cubans are up to. And even more so in places like the Philippines, you know, the communist in the communist menace, quote unquote, in the Philippines is so minuscule as to be almost unnoticeable. This is a country that's virtually been a part of the United States for 80 years, and the people there are very much, you know, sort of inured to the American way of life. And there's tiny little, you know, Filipino communist guerrilla groups out in the outer, you know, island reaches, but. The main amount of the populace, from what I can see, they just have no interest in communism. They really don't, which is what makes Marcos is trying to pin these things on the communists even more laughable. There are a lot of places in the world where the Russians just really don't have any clout, and it's only when the United States has absolutely squeezed every last drop of blood out of the stones and made a wretched mess of the place that the you know, the locals will turn as a last resort to anybody who will sell them weapons to overthrow these governments.
Developing what Nip said a little further, it's a very easy thing to slip into the view, which is certainly put forward in this country by the government and by other interests, that you know, the whole world is basically a struggle between the United States and the Soviet Union, and that all of the events that one sees fall somehow into that into that framework, the U.S. versus Soviet struggle. And it's just not the case. There are, I would say, probably most of the issues in the world do not have anything directly to do with the Soviet Union, or they certainly don't stem from the Soviet-American conflict. And I think it's a mistake to see the world as a sort of a binary situation where it's either the United States or the Soviet Union, because usually that is not the case. And it, you know, the notion that the Soviet Union is sitting back like some sort of a cocked gun or a coiled spring ready to intrude itself in any situation where the United States should prove weak or is not involved, it's just not it's not a view that's going to hold much water.
They can barely afford to feed most of their populace.
Right, Dave, I think that's a good point, and I must admit I am kind of naive as far as a lot of these things go, which is one of the reasons I was so interested in what you guys were saying. How would you, like, for instance, the problem with India and the massacres of the Sikhs over there? I mean, to get away from a Soviet versus American type of thing, and our support basically of that government there.
Well, for one thing, and I'll try and make this brief because we do have some other callers now waiting, I would say that's a good instance of an almost completely unrelated operation having virtually nothing to do with either the United States or Russia. And the United States' involvement in India is very shaky. The Indian government is rigorously neutral, and if anything, they tend to lean a little bit toward the Soviet Union. At least they go out of their way to show that they're not prejudiced against the Soviet Union, which they don't bother to do with the United States. So that's a religious matter, and it's also to an extent an internal civil matter, which is really complicated, and we don't really have time for now.
And just to muddy the waters for you, there have been reports, notably in the New York Times, that Indian intelligence officials had, for example, in the storming of the Golden Temple, Indian intelligence officials had reported the possibility of CIA involvement with some of those Sikhs, not with the Sikh minority as a whole, but with some of the elements which may have been involved. So
yeah,
just to muddy the waters for you.
That's the Khalistan thing. But yeah, sometime, maybe call up One Step Beyond and we can talk a little bit more about this.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, back to the phones again. Good evening, Santa Clara, and welcome to Radio Free America.
Hi, I've been in and out of my car and in and out of my room all night and haven't had much of a chance to catch everything you guys have been saying. But being in the U.S. military, I seem to be subject to a lot of saber rattling and propaganda.
You are one of the sabers that's being rattled, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. My question is, how, you know, I haven't been able to catch all your show. How aware do you think the current administration is of the ties, you know, that they've got with all these people? How aware do you think they are of, you know, all these things that these people have been doing?
Well, I think when you say administration, do you mean Ronald Reagan, or do you mean the people that dress him and pull his strings?
All the way up to the top. Let's talk about Ronald.
Well, Ronald, my personal view of Reagan is that he's essentially an intelligence front. You know, that may sound sort of ludicrous. I really think that Ronald Reagan is just what he always has been, namely an actor, and that he is up there to look good and to sound good and to give a convincing and effective performance, but that the real powers that are calling the shots in this country are to be found behind Ronald Reagan and in his shadow, so to speak. I think if the names you want to look for Ed Meese, look for Robert Keith Gray, one of the people we brought up in connection with the corporate front set up by Turple and Wilson. Look for people like Henry Kissinger. Look for people like his mentor, a fellow by the name of Fritz Kramer. They, I suspect, know quite a bit about it. Ronnie, not very much.
There's also another thing to look at, and this, again, also gets to be very complicated, but I would suggest that there is always in Washington at any given time a serious split between the current incumbent powers in the White House, even if they're a conservative, White House, and the actual, day in, day out lifers in the intelligence and military hierarchy, that under an administration like Reagan's, there is more sameness of vision, okay? But the fact is that a lot of Reagan's people are real ideologues in the sense that a lot of these CIA people are not. They may have the same sort of what I would consider to be kind of Looney Tunes ideas about how the world should run, but the CIA people probably generally tend to be a little more realistic about what can be gotten away with and what can't. Some of the Reagan people strike me as being a little bit more sort of fire and brimstone. Well, what the heck, if the nukes fly, we're all going to heaven anyway. So, there may be a slight conflict of that sort going on, too, between, say, people like William Casey, who is mostly a Reagan man, and the people underneath him who are the CIA hierarchy. There may still be also some conflict there. It's hard to say.
Yeah, do you feel like the clandestine intelligence activities in this country have gained more power under Reagan's administration?
Oh, I'm sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
They've been absolutely unleashed in a way that they haven't been since probably Richard Nixon was riding at the peak of his popularity, and before that, since probably the last years of the Eisenhower administration.
To the extent, caller, where bringing up something that another person brought up, which was how easy is it for the president and how easy is the intelligence establishment to control? Something that we've been talking about for years on this and other programs on the station is the shooting of President Reagan and the connections between the Hinckley family and the Bush family, among others. That whole incident was, but there was a lot more to it than what the press made out at the time. And let's just say, I think covert operations wound up ensnaring Mr. Reagan, among others.
I see. One more quick question, and then I'll let you guys go. Is there any way I can obtain a transcript of this show?
Well, there is a way to get a taped copy, and if you want to give us a call either tonight after this broadcast or after one of our other broadcasts here on KFJC, we'll be happy to give you that information.
Okie dokie.
Okay.
Do. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye. Okay, back to the phones again. About 8 minutes left. We may get two more calls, maybe three more calls on. Good evening, Berkeley. Welcome to Radio Free America. Oops, wrong line. Good evening, Palo Alto. Welcome to Radio Free America.
Yeah, this is just real brief and real short. It's just a little bit off base, but with all the fuss about Ferraro and her taxes and stuff, it seems really funny that nowhere in the national media has anybody brought up the fact that when Ronald Reagan was governor of California, he did not file his taxes for 1 year, and the reason he gave why he didn't file them was that he forgot.
Yeah, well, Ronald Reagan is, believe it or not, is not a very hot news item right now, and that's just the way the Republicans want it. You know, Ferraro is something that they have no real ammunition for at this point, and Ronald Reagan is not really important at this point if you think about it. I mean, the whole Dallas thing has nothing to do with Reagan at all.
Well, you're absolutely right about that. It's all sham.
I mean, they're going to break a bottle of champagne across him and push him down the slipway into the ocean, and that's about all he's going to have to do with it.
Yeah, he's been looking funny. I think his sinus is starting to fall out.
You may be right. Anyway, the Ferraro thing is another thing that I'd be happy to talk about on One Step Beyond sometime.
Okay,
thanks for the call.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And good evening, Berkeley. Welcome to Radio Free America.
Hi. I just had a couple comments about, how Reagan kind of fits into the administration and all of this.
Mm-hmm.
That guy was asking about it.
Right.
And I was just wondering, either of you guys have you ever seen that movie called Being There that Peter Sellers starred in?
Yeah, yes, I have, as a matter of fact.
I mean, it's is perfect. I mean, that guy is Reagan.
You know, it's funny because I thought that too when I saw that. For those of you out there not familiar, it's the movie Being There is based on a book by Jerzy Kosinski, and it's about a man who's essentially a half-witted gardener who, through a series of coincidences, begins to be taken as very profound and eventually winds up becoming president of the United States, I think, right? Or at least a senator or something.
Where have we heard that before?
Right, right. No, it is awfully appropriate, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe that's why Peter Sellers died.
Maybe that's the way we can get Reagan out, is to remind everybody about that movie.
Well, people don't seem to mind.
Don't let this happen to you again.
People don't seem to mind. That's the really frightening thing about Ronald Reagan.
Too busy thinking about Red Dawn.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Here's something else I've got here. It's a quote from a guy named Paul Goodman. It was a copy of a page I got out of a magazine called The Alternative Press magazine or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It says, in America, you can say anything you want as long as it doesn't have any effect.
Maybe that answers the earlier question.
Yeah, really. I was going to say.
That
yeah.
The caller came up with as to why Dave and I aren't, like,
aren't dead. Yeah.
Aren't walking cancer experiments or something. Okay, good. Thanks, caller.
Yeah.
We'll see you. Bye-bye. Okay, time for at least one last call here, and we've got Redwood City. Good evening. Welcome to Radio Free America.
Yes, I'm from Canada, and I was wondering how the CIA helps to elect the officials in Canada.
Oh, well, that's a heck of a question. Actually, you know, there have been some very strange Canadian connections. That's hard to say, Canadian connections, in a couple of the things we've talked about. One of the big groups that seem to have been involved in some shape or form with the John F. Kennedy assassination is a group called Permindex, of which Clay Shaw, who was a suspect in the conspiracy in the Garrison investigation in New Orleans, was one of the board members. And Permindex operated very strongly through, I believe it was Toronto and Montreal, Canada. And they're an international, essentially international fascist business front for God knows whom exactly. They're for a lot of different things.
NATO, among others.
Also, we've been finding this when we were researching the Vatican connection, some of the books that touch on the Vatican connection, the drug connection, reveal that there's a big drug pipeline, and part of it goes in through Toronto and into the northern United States. Now, that seems to be also connected to some of these intelligence sources. Other than that, I don't have any offhand information. I do know Brian Mulroney went to go see Ronald Reagan, and they're the best of friends. So if you guys get Mulroney at September 4th, you may indeed have another Reagan friend in your own halls of Parliament.
Well, what I was wondering is, here in the U.S., when you're really against a president, it seems like no one really speaks up, whereas in Canada, if we hate or we disagree with our prime minister, we throw tomatoes at them and everything like that. The prime minister can give us the finger, yet here in a football game, if a player gives them the finger, they're thrown out of the game.
Well, Americans are a little more laid back about their politics. They'd rather watch Victoria Principal's bosoms bounce up and down than pay attention
right.
to political affairs.
Is that why the country is in so much trouble, though?
Well, it's one of the reasons. Very quickly, in response to how I'll give you something, not an answer, but another question for you to follow up on. And in terms of a serious answer to something you asked about possible CIA influence on Canadian leaders, take a look at some of Margaret Trudeau's goings on, like particularly her association with Studio 54, which was a mob connected discotheque in New York City, which is very, very fashionable. And take a look at some of her machinations and some of the places she's turned up in, because she certainly didn't do Elliot Trudeau any great amount of political. Trudeau didn't get a lot of political mileage out of Maggie's doings, and
didn't seem to matter, really.
Well, I don't know. Just take a look at Margaret Trudeau and see, again, I haven't got anything definitive, but see what you find out in connection with her and sort of her activities.
I can tell you also a couple of quick things to sum up. We have also, in the course of the broadcast, run across some very strange characters involved with certain things that, say, ex-intelligence agents, KKK people and things like that who turned up in Canada. We have run across that, and one of our local cases, the Valerie McDonald case, wound up in Canada. And again, we don't have time to talk about that too. So there have been some various Canadian connections. The other last thing that I would suggest, that although every now and then America does get galvanized to the point of rock throwing, etc., The main difference, of course, is that Canada is about a tenth of the population.
Right.
And people spend about a third of the year indoors, where they have nothing to do really but read and watch TV and play card games, and there's a lot more concentration on things like the political world and things of that nature. So you've got a much more kind of a smaller world to operate in, and I think it makes, just like in Europe, for a much tighter and more interested electoral community.
One thing is the drug thing you touched on, is that Nova Scotia is one of the largest drug smuggling provinces in the world. More drugs are smuggled into that province than any other place almost in North America because of the cold.
Wasn't aware of that, and that's something we'll look into.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
I think we're just about flat out, and I think we're going to have to end on that. Unfortunately, I warned you guys not to wait till the last minute, didn't I?
Really?
Okay. Anything you want to say to sum up Dave Emery?
Well, just pay attention to... Watch the terrorism, watch our response to it, and watch who's doing it. And, you know, that by way of summing up. Also, be sure to listen to the other shows on Sundays. Start at 10 o'clock in the morning with Mae Brussel, 10 to 11. One Step Beyond, hosted by my cohort Nip Tuck here, from 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock. Stay tuned after that from 11 to midnight for Hard Rain. Also, Hard Rain aired Thursday, 1:30 to 2 in the afternoon. And tomorrow night, tune in tomorrow night, Wednesday, from 9:30 to 10:30 for Mae Brussel's World Watchers International.
Okay.
Again, we're not broadcasting her current tapes, but we are broadcasting some of her back tapes, and in as much as she's the premier researcher in this field, you might want to listen.
That's right. In the words of a former person at the political forefront who's now become another Jesus freak, don't follow leaders, watch the parking meters. This is Nip Tuck for Dave Emery saying thank you for joining us, and do join us again. We'll be back next month with another archive broadcast, as well as every week with our regular programming. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you. And thanks for joining us on Radio Free America here on KFJC 89.7, Los Altos Hills.